Welcome to today's edition of Sex in the Bull City. I am Celine Malone, and I am here with Jeff Schaefer today.
Yeah, hi.
Tell us what you do here at Bull City Psychotherapy, Jeff.
Sure. So, let's see. I joined like maybe 5 years ago or so with Sophia. She found me out. She was my CSAT supervisor. And when I was going through CSAT, and we worked together, and she really liked my approach and stuff. So we worked out. I had my own business before that. So I came here, worked with Sophia. It's been wonderful, fantastic. So my primary approach is sex addiction, porn addiction, anything with sex in the title, sex wholeness, sex development, sexual purity, any of those wheelhouses. That's what I go toward. I also do, of course, EMDR, and anxiety and family issues. So anything along those lines, have been primarily the things that I focus on.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And also I tend to gravitate because, my background is in faith. And so, I have my, Masters of Divinity, MDiv, from Gordon Conwell. And so I was a youth pastor, an associate pastor. And so I tend to gravitate toward, and people find me out, of people who are, you know, working in the church or struggling through the church or have a church background or just want to talk about their faith in and along with the issues at hand. So,
okay. Yeah. All right. And we're here today to talk about an issue that I know only from personal experience.
Okay.
And that's ADHD.
Yeah.
And we're here to talk about it specifically in the context of addiction, sex addiction, porn addiction.
Yeah. So this is an area that, and I tell this to people who are going through schooling right now, it's great to specialize, of course, in an area. And so for me, it was anything to do with sex. But also certain things I wish I had learned going in that would have helped along with this. And one of them would have been studying ADHD. Mm. I'm not clinically able to diagnose. They would need to go to a psychiatrist for that. Okay. But what I can do is I've learned, because I have so many guys who have it in adult form. Mm-hmm. All right. I've learned how to read the signs, help them, because you have to approach sex addiction and ADHD at the same time. Mm-hmm. You can't wait and just do one and then go into the other. Right. They affect each other too much. And I did not know that going in. All right. So having that diagnosed, and it's interesting to me because most people don't put that down on their inform. Mm. And sometimes I find out, halfway through, and it's like, oh, by the way, I think I have ADHD. And I'm like, that would have been helpful. To know that right off the bat.
So always share with your clinician.
That's right. Always, always. Or what they'll do is, and this is the other thing that's very amazing to me, is I was diagnosed with that as a kid. Mm-hmm. All right. And I said, okay, how did that affect you? What has happened since? And they have no clue. All I know was I got diagnosed. I got on some medication at some point, but now I'm off of that. But it's still affecting them. Mm-hmm. They have not made the connection that adult ADHD still really affects everything.
Yes.
You know, and especially impulse control along with sex addiction. Because ADHD mindset, okay, is very squirrel-like. I like to call it the squirrel because it's, you know, all of, you know, it's just
awareness of many things, many stimuli.
Yeah, that's right. Time. And they don't know how to focus at times.
Right.
Okay. So the impulse is, I want medication. I want to self-soothe. I want to feel better. Mm-hmm. So I gravitate to anything immediately that will give me that. Porn, mm-hmm. easy peasy. Right. Mm-hmm. So that's where it becomes just this, you know, continual. And when we're shutting down porn, it's like, what else can there be? Mm-hmm. And so whack-a-mole is a term I use a lot with people who are trying to get rid of one thing and then another thing pops up. People with ADHD, it's chronic. It's just there. They're just looking. Their mind is so used to now, 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 now. I need this now, you know, and I don't know how to control it. So this has been a learning thing for me as we go forward. So the other thing I've learned is medication, number one, absolutely helpful. Okay. And a lot of times, the pushback I get is it makes me feel weird. I don't like it. It slows me down or whatever. But it's essential that they get on medication. All right. That has to be prescribed by a psychiatrist, of course. Okay. And that has to be monitored. And sometimes you need more, sometimes you need less. It's just an ongoing, it's not a one pill fix all thing. Okay. And then they have to learn an awareness, things like mindfulness, how to capsulize the thought.
Focus.
That's right.
Focus.
You know, and there's such a stimuli or a stigma, that's the word I'm looking for people who have ADHD, that they're so hesitant to put another label on themselves, right? No one likes labels. That it's like, I just hate that. I hate being, you know, saying this is who I am. But they need to be able to conquer it, work through it, because, you know, there's a push now in the ADHD family to look at it as a superpower, because on some aspects it is that you can focus that well, you know, for that long period of time and just dive in deep is a superpower. It is a great strength that they've hopefully harnessed and are using in their workplace. They just haven't learned how to use it in socialization, their homes, and relationships. You know, then we're back to shooting from the hip and everything, you know, just kind of not making sense and me doing this and that and the other thing.
Chaos.
Right.
Chaos.
Exactly. The other thing that I've learned about people with ADHD is they seem to have a higher need or a sense of rejection. Okay. And that can be because they've grown up being told you're different. You think of things differently. You're not like everybody else, right? So there's that kind of stigma that they're working through, but they're also it's with ADHD, you're getting closer to being more on the bipolar scale of one or the other. And that can include, you know, the feeling of a heightened awareness of rejection.
I've heard
Okay.
it called rejection sensitive dysphoria.
Yeah, that's
So
right.
you get this kind of overwhelming sense of being outside yourself
Yes.
just from the impression that you've been rejected.
That's
Not
right.
even from reality that
Not
you've been
from
rejected,
reality, but it's their
but this
mind.
sense,
Yes.
any threat of rejection
Yes.
gives this really overwhelming
It
sense.
can be a look, okay? It can be a word, it can be a tone. I've heard this from all the guys that I work with. They don't like me or this is happening, and sometimes with their spouses, there's just this kind of you know, you're judging me right now attitude. Okay, so when we get and everybody feels rejection, okay? It's not, you know, just ADHD people, right? We all then change and learn to alter and medicate somehow. Some
And by
with
medicate, you don't necessarily mean with medicine. You
medicine.
mean
I mean, what would you,
like do
I
something to make it better,
right.
feel better.
And that's normal. I mean, that is a good, healthy thing to do. You know, sometimes you, if you feel sluggish, you want to go out and maybe jog around the block. I mean, that's medicating, right? That's taking care of a feeling or a mood, right?
How do
Okay.
I treat it? How do I make
How,
it better?
that's right. But we want people to do it in a healthy way,
Not
not
with
the,
pornography.
not with pornography and not with unhealthy things. So this again goes back to the whack-a-mole of, you know, overeating or spending or gambling or any of the vices that makes us feel really good instantly, you know, that becomes our go-tos. I want to feel good now about me.
The dopamine seeking.
Yes,
Anything
that's
that
right.
gives you that neurological hit
That's
of,
right.
I feel better,
That's right.
even if it's just for a short amount of
That's
time.
right.
And I think this is why addiction is so prevalent among people with ADHD,
Yes.
because there is this constant sense of dopamine seeking.
That's right. That's right. And they've learned to medicate that way throughout their entire life. Okay. And you know, one of the things we say about, you know, pornography is it's always yes. Pornography always invites and says, we're never going to reject you. Mm-hmm. We always want you to be here. You know, you're never going to hear no.
That's right.
Right. So of course it's a go-to, you know, if I want to feel good about myself, I just, you know, I know how to overload my brain. Mm-hmm. You know, I know what I need and I'll spend a short amount of time and then hours just creating that dopamine, you know, the serotonin going on over and over again. So, yeah. So, again, treating ADHD people is both and. You have to look at the what they're going toward, their drugs of choice.
Right.
But then also their behavioral ways of why they're reaching out that way.
Yeah. What need is that filling?
That's right.
Exactly.
You know.
And you can't just leave that need unfilled.
No.
And our goal as clinicians is never to just leave people hanging.
No.
It's to help them find other ways of meeting their needs and seeking dopamine.
In healthy ways.
That don't require these unhealthy behaviors.
That's right. Because one of the questions I get asked a lot from guys is, when you take away my pornography, you're taking away a coping mechanism that's been a friend.
And has worked.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Every single time. So, what are you substituting it for? What's coming back into my life? Mm-hmm. And I have to reassure them, okay, what we're going to try to strive for is something that's not quid pro quo. Otherwise, that would become an addiction as well, okay? What we want is healthy connection. And this is where Carnes comes in and basically says, you know, addiction has to do with the breakdown of relationship and intimacy real relationships, not falsehoods and imaginary and fantasy.
Mm-hmm. So you're talking about going deeper in relationships.
Yes,
not
absolutely.
Just we can watch a movie together and not argue.
That's right.
Like this, you're talking about legitimate sharing of
opening
who
up,
you are
that's
as a
right.
person.
Because we all want to be seen, understood, and accepted.
Yes, we do.
Okay, those are the criteria. Can I be seen with you? Can you understand me? Can I not be judged and accepted by you?
That's right.
That's what we're looking for. Mm-hmm. And if we don't get it, even from our spouse, our partner, whoever, then we seek it other places. And one of the things that I constantly remind people who are in these relationships is one person can never be the be-all and end-all. They are not built in any way, shape, or form, even if they're husbands, wives, and we've made that commitment to them, okay, they can't fulfill all of the obligations and my needs in developing relationships, healthy
That's
relationships.
Right.
I have to have hobbies. I have to have guy friends that, you know, support me, understand me. I need to have people around me that feed into me. Now, my significant other, my wife in this case, might be the person I turn to 80% of the time.
Mm-hmm.
That's their role, okay? But they're not to be the be-all and end-all.
They cannot be the place, the sole source
That's
of
right.
your dopamine, your connection,
That's right.
your fulfilling your needs.
That's right. It has to come from many places, okay? That's why we encourage, you know, development of friends, development of hobbies, seeking out and doing good exercise, eating well, sleeping well, of course, any of those kinds of things to help us get out of ourselves.
Yes.
You know, any addiction, any kind of crutch causes you to circle the drain and go down in.
Mm-hmm.
We want to go out and connect. So one of the things that we have them do is when I say, you know, call somebody and you should have a bunch of people that you can call and talk to and relate to. Because what happens is when I start feeling me going down the drain, if I connect with somebody like you and I are talking, my brain now shifts gears to saying, I'm in a dialogue with you. Mm-hmm. I don't know what you're about to say. So I'm waiting on you and we're having this back and forth.
Yes.
That keeps me going out rather than going in and circling the drain. You know,
it's really easy to hide
when
you're inward facing.
Yes. Yeah. It's, you know, it's alone. It's shaming. It's isolation,
yes.
Which is alone. But, you know, all of that There are times to be alone. That's healthy as well. But what we're talking about is an unhealthy dependence on just making sure that nobody sees the real us.
That's right. The barriers. A question I have for you. In my own research about ADHD, because I wasn't diagnosed until I was an adult, something that they call pathological demand avoidance. So this internal sense of if I'm told what to do, my first response is no. No.
No.
Like, even if it's something I wanted to do,
Right.
I noticed this in myself.
Yeah.
If I was going to the kitchen to get my husband a glass of water,
Yeah.
and he asks me to get a glass of water for him while I'm on the way,
Yeah.
my initial response in my head is no.
Yes. Yeah.
Wait,
Yeah.
why would I even say no? Right?
Right.
I was already doing it.
Yeah.
But internally, I have this. And I'm wondering from your thinking, is how does that impact someone's experience of addiction
Yeah.
and treatment of
Yes.
addiction?
Yes. So a lot of times what I have them do is they have to break the mold. They have to break through the ceiling. They have to test the waters. Okay. So for instance, you can have people that you're supposed to call in case what I term it like, okay, we don't want to feel like the train is passing us, the roar of the train, and you're really shooken up because it's right there, right then. We want to see the train coming down the track from a miles off and go, okay, I know what to do now. Okay, right? So in that, we put in what I call parachutes of many different things, okay, of escape plans, or ways of dealing. All right. So one of those is I want to connect with people. All right. So I want them to have on their phones five people that they can connect with that they can call out and do. So we will role play, or a client just said, oh, you mean a fire drill? I went, yeah, that's a great term.
I love
Let's do
it.
a fire drill where you automatically do it, even though you don't need it at that moment. Okay. Call the person up and saying, hey, I'm making connection with you. I don't need you right now, but I'm retraining my brain to be able to give myself permission to do this when I do need you. Because we get that pushback like you're experiencing, that when it comes, push comes at the time, the brain will start lying to us. They don't want to hear from you. It's too late. Whatever
Every
excuse,
excuse you can
no, that's
make.
right, is going to be thrown at it because that's the no. That's the, it's too scary. It's too scary to reach out because they don't want to hear from me. I don't want to be a burden, right? Now, if they've worked through it and they've talked with their buddy and they're like, he knows I'm going to call at some point, then let's practice that so that it's not a new feeling. It's a, I've done this before. And then I can get back into the yes.
You start building that neural
Yeah, that's
pathway
right.
of connection.
That's right. And saying it's okay. But you're right. Everybody has a kind of no moment that they have to override. Okay. So in church language, just, if you're going to, because this is my background, if you invite somebody to church, expect no, because that's going to be their reaction. No, don't want to. It doesn't matter whether interested or not. It's going to be no. It's self-protecting. No, can't do it. Expect maybe by the third time or fourth time, the person to finally kind of chew on it and go, do I really want to or not? And maybe it's still no. Okay. But maybe they've chewed on enough to go, okay, I'm getting kind of comfortable with being asked, and it's not that bad. Maybe, yeah, maybe I'd give it a shot. But it takes that, familiarity and that persistence in a good way. Because no one wants to feel abused, used, discarded, treated like a project. Okay. And that's that no. That's that can't. Don't put me out right now.
The term that I used was pathologic demand avoidance, PDA. And I saw somebody recently reframe that in a way that I absolutely love and I've started using for myself in PDA instead of pathologic demand avoidance.
Yeah.
Persistent drive for autonomy.
Oh, neat. Yeah. That works.
It helped me to reframe for myself.
Yeah.
That I am an autonomous person
mm-hmm.
and I get to make my own choices. I get to do those things. And as long as I can check that, like I'm going to the kitchen for the water.
Mm-hmm.
I can look around and say, oh, he is really not trying to control me.
Right.
I was already going to do it.
Yeah.
It was my choice.
Yeah.
To have made this.
Yes.
This.
Yes.
And it's not because someone outside of me is coming in and trying to
manipulate me.
Right.
You know, and, abuse you, you know, overpower you.
Right.
Any of those things.
But that sense is so strong with ADHD.
Yes, because you're always on guard, right?
Because you're always on guard. And so if you just kind of check and make sure that it's coming from someone who is bringing your best interests at heart.
That's
right. Your clinician.
That's right.
Coming from someone like maybe your partner.
Mm-hmm.
That they really are acting in your best interest.
Right.
And it's something that you want to do anyway.
That's right.
But that's so hard. Be aware of the no.
Yeah.
Be aware that that's a part of your brain. Mm-hmm. It's safety seeking.
That's right.
It's making sure you're safe.
That's right.
And then you can move forward.
Yeah.
Autonomously, on your own, you can make the choice to go with this program.
And you have to recognize that pattern within yourself, right? And then counter it, because it is a lie.
Yes.
It's a safety, you know, mechanism to make sure that you're okay. But for the most part, your brain is lying to you that you're now not safe. You know, this is where anxiety comes in, you know, where it's like, if I cross this bridge, it's going to collapse.
Yes.
Right? The phobias of all these things that pop up. The anxiety is, I'm in danger because my brain is telling me I'm in danger when I'm really not in danger.
Right.
And so
and it's okay to notice.
Yeah.
But then do the thing anyway.
That's right.
Don't let it keep you from doing the healthy behaviors.
That's right.
That you have listed for us.
Right. But you have to override that by trial and error.
Yes.
You have to say, am I really going to get hurt and harmed by this? And, you know,
exactly.
Probably not. Okay, now I'm going to override the no and say yes.
Yes.
You know, but that's training.
Mm-hmm.
That's behavioral training.
And that's part of what we do as clinicians.
Absolutely.
Is help people to recognize that that's a pattern that's occurring inside of them.
That's right.
And practice new behaviors.
Yeah. I mean, and this sometimes is decades in the making because I've had spouses where they are, you know, they've been lied to. There's been deceit and other things going on, some real trauma.
Mm-hmm.
And to rebuild so that they can get to the yes again is really hard. And I get it. I get it from both sides. But at some point, the ADHD brain has to figure out what's a truth and what's a lie.
Yeah.
From themselves and from their partner. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's hard. That's tricky.
It really is.
Yeah.
And that, again, that's part of what we do
that's
with
right.
people is help them to look at that and recognize what reality is.
That's right. That's right.
Kind of a double check for their brain.
Yeah. So I would just say, hey, if you have ever been diagnosed with ADHD and you're struggling with any kind of addiction or coping mechanism, that they're linked. And you need to investigate both. Find somebody who will help you with both at the same time. And not be afraid of some of the labels. Because we need to turn them around and make them strengths. You see them for what they are. I always think that our greatest strengths are also our greatest weaknesses. There are things that we turn to because they're so easy to go to. They make it a strength. But they can also be our Achilles heel because we become so numb to it and so used to it, we don't see the damage that can be happening because of that, right? So we need to become more aware. Mm-hmm. So.
Okay. All right. So you're taking new clients.
Yeah, I am.
I'm taking new clients. If any of this has resonated with you, We are available. Find us on at bullcitypsychotherapy.com. We have a new practice in Charlotte. Mm-hmm. Can you remember the website there?
No.
Oh, gracious.
Sorry, so new. It's so new. This is just, you know,
Queen
yeah.
Queen City Healthy Sex and Relationships.
Sounds good to me. Yeah.
Google that. Yeah, let's see what you find. We will be available to you. Thanks for joining us today.